This is Free Speech Radio News for May 1st, 2006. Filling in for Aldo Bogado, I'm Mitch Jezerich at Pacifica Station WBAI in New York.
We love America! We love America!
Today is May Day, International Workers' Day. Hundreds of thousands of immigrant workers took to the streets demanding immigrant rights and respect and held a National Day of Action. In a special broadcast, we take a look at the rallies and the boycotts, the economic dynamics that causes migration, and how some immigrant workers that big labor has forgot are fighting for their rights. We'll bring you these stories and more after these headlines.
I'm Shannon Young with the Free Speech Radio News headlines. Immigrant workers and their supporters are participating in a massive boycott in dozens of cities throughout the U.S. today. Dubbed a day without immigrants, organizers are calling for a day of no work, no school, and no shopping. Solidarity actions have spread to Mexico, with strike supporters boycotting and in some cases blockading U.S.-based transnational restaurants and retail outlets. We'll have reports from the streets later in the newscast. Sri Lanka canceled May Day celebrations for the first time in its history in the midst of escalating violence that threatens a four-year-old truce between the government and the Tamil Tiger rebels. Hundreds of soldiers and civilians have been killed in attacks and counterattacks in the past few weeks. Pania Monica Vasagam reports from Sri Lanka.
Sri Lankan political parties refrained from participating in May Day rallies and public meetings as a Klemo explosion rocked the eastern port city of Trincomalee, killing a sailor and four civilians. Government officials said politicians cancelled May Day functions, suspecting large gatherings could be targeted by the Tamil Tiger rebels for suicide bomb attacks. The Sri Lankan army commander, who was seriously wounded in a suspected rebel suicide bomb attack last week, is said to be recovering. That attack killed 11 people in the highly secured army headquarters in capital Colombo last Tuesday. Meanwhile, the rebels declared May Day a day of mourning and organized protest campaigns blaming the government for the recent deaths of over 100 Tamil civilians in the north and east of the country. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Ponnaiah Manikavasagam from Vavuniya, Sri Lanka.
The parties involved in the crisis in Sudan's Darfur region have failed to meet an African Union and United Nations deadline to reach a peace deal to end the conflict, which has claimed more than 200,000 lives. Sema Lakoya reports from Lagos.
The African Union and United Nations set the end of April as the deadline for representatives of the Sudanese government and those of two rebel groups holding peace talks in Nigeria to reach an agreement. The Sudanese government has agreed to sign a last-minute AU draft peace agreement, but the two rebel groups refused to sign it. They said it fell short of their demand for greater representation in government. Although the deadline for a peace deal has been extended by another 48 hours, it is unclear if there will be a breakthrough. The peace talks have been going on in the last 2 years. More than 3 million people face starvation as a result of the conflict. International peacemakers insist there is an urgent need to end the conflict in order to halt the humanitarian crisis. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Sam Olukoya in Lagos.
The Israeli government decided yesterday to speed up the construction of its controversial West Bank separation wall after approving changes to its route. The new route will extend deep into the West Bank, putting tens of thousands of settlers on the Israeli side of the wall and isolating thousands of Palestinians in villages near Jerusalem from the city. The decision was announced yesterday as Israel launched raids on locations throughout the West Bank. Manar Jabrin reports.
Israeli army troops shot and killed Etav Zalat, 45, a mother of five, during an invasion of the West Bank city of Tul Karim this morning. The soldiers say they were looking for a wanted Islamic Jihad operative. Abu Muhammad, Etav's husband, describes what happened.
When the soldiers opened fire, my wife and I were sitting in the kitchen by the window. Our two daughters were sitting 1 meter away. When the shooting stopped, one of the girls started screaming, "My hand, my hand." I went to check my daughter and I found a hole in her arm and the bones were crushed. I covered the wound with my hand to stop the bleeding. Then my other daughter yelled at me saying, "Look at my mother." I turned to my wife and found her dead.
In the past 24 hours, Israeli troops carried out raids in the West Bank cities of Nablus, Hebron, and Bethlehem, arresting a total of 40 people. For FSRN from IMMC.org in Palestine, this is Manar Jibrin.
The federal government has intervened in a class action lawsuit brought against AT&T. Christina Anistad reports from San Francisco.
The federal government filed a motion on Friday to dismiss the Electronic Frontier Foundation's class action lawsuit against AT&T. The Electronic Civil Rights Group alleges AT&T broke the Federal Telecommunications Act and Electronic Communications Privacy Act for giving the National Security Agency access to the telephone and internet records of millions of AT&T's clients. But the federal government has intervened, seeking dismissal of the suit, arguing that the government's military and state secrets privilege permits the government to protect against the unauthorized disclosure and litigation of information that may harm national security interests. The Electronic Frontier Foundation has vowed to fight the motion. A hearing on the government's motion to dismiss the AT&T lawsuit is scheduled for May 17th. For FSRN, I'm Christina Onnestad in San Francisco.
And I'm Shannon Young for Free Speech Radio News.
On this International Workers' Day, immigrants and supporters in the United States celebrated by boycotting work and consumerism to highlight the contributions of immigrants. This comes as Congress is stalled in crafting legislation that would determine their future. The most extreme bill, which has been received with large protest and staunch opposition by immigrant rights advocates, is H.R. 4437, which would make a person without papers a felon. Free Speech Radio News will explore several elements of this polarizing debate, but first we take you to cities around the country where protests and boycotts are taking place on this day without immigrants.
Tens of thousands of marchers gathered in Chicago's Union Park this morning to assemble for a May Day march for immigrant rights. Organizers expect hundreds of thousands of people to be in the streets today, with those numbers growing by the minute. Businesses across the city have closed in solidarity with marchers, or because they have no workers to open. What matters to marchers is the chance to hammer home the importance of immigrant rights to the national economy. Community activist Claudio Gaiette.
People should be supporting this because it's a human rights issue. It's a global issue. In 1886, the economy was changing. Today, we're at a similar economic political crossroads.
Chris Giovannis reporting from Chicago.
Immigrant rights organizers across the city are reevaluating what to do since the city denied their permits for today. Organizers say this is an attempt to stymie the proposed shutdown of the city by forcing any protests to occur after the workday is over. According to Mei Chen, vice president of Unite Here, a union that represents garment workers, many immigrant laborers also face union rules that will stop them from boycotting work today. Therefore, the union is encouraging garment industry and Chinese immigrant workers to wear white t-shirts, Radio Roots reporter Arturo Contreras.
East Los Angeles students from Roosevelt, Garfield, Shore, Lincoln, and other high schools are rallying in Ruben Salazar Park. Abraham Savala, a student from East Los Angeles College, says he would like people to look at immigrant rights as human rights.
You could use any terminology like undocumented worker, you could use illegal immigrant, but bottom line, we should first define ourselves as human beings.
I'm Monica Lopez for Free Speech Radio News.
You need to know that we're here, that we're watching you, that we see you, that we're calling you out.
Outside the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Office in North Houston, activists protested the IFCO raids. They were led in part by students from the University of Houston. Julia Chavez is a sociology graduate student.
They want to maybe, you know, instill fear in people. There's been recent rumors about, you know, spottings of INS vans or, you know, things like that, agents. So, I mean, it could be rumors, but at the same time, that's the fear that's created.
In North Houston, I'm Renee Feltz.
As we focus on immigrants, their struggles, and their battles today, Free Speech Radio News correspondent Luz Ruiz, who is in Tijuana, Mexico, takes a look at the economic conditions that leads to northward migration patterns.
In Mexico, May 1st marches that have historically commemorated the national labor movement will join in, demanding respect for immigrant worker rights in the U.S. With the escalating expulsion of Mexican labor from Mexico, analysts and activists are dissecting the roots of the deteriorating working and living conditions in Mexico that have provoked the current immigration crisis. Benjamin Prado, a member of Unión del Barrio, an organization working with the Mexican community in San Diego, says that immigration problems are directly tied to current economic policies like the ones implemented through NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, signed between Canada, the United States, and Mexico in 1994.
Y ahorita el tema de migración no es nada nuevo. De hecho, inclusive...
Immigration issues are nothing new. The laws that the U.S. has passed have been to the advantage of the labor force. So the construction of the wall between the U.S. and Mexico, the Border Patrol and everything that comes with the Department of Homeland Security are being used as repressive weapons in order to control the labor force resulted from an economic policy in the form of free trade.
Mexicans compose 57% of the 10.3 million undocumented residents in the U.S., according to the Pew Hispanic Center report, with hundreds of thousands fleeing a fleeting Mexican economy every year in search of better-paying jobs. Luz Maria Guerrero is a Mexican undocumented worker currently working in San Diego, California. She talks about why she decided to look for work on the other side of the border and leave her job in Tijuana.
Antes trabajaba en una fábrica de televisiones.
Before, I used to work in a factory building televisions. It was a bit hard. I used to work the graveyard shift and made a minimum wage. It was barely enough for the necessities. I earned $90 a week from Monday through Friday. I had to pay expenses and my daughter's education, and it just wasn't enough. I had the opportunity to work here over the weekends, so that is why I am here working in the U.S.
Carmen Valadez from the Workers Information Center, CITAC, a Tijuana-based organization that accompanies workers' struggles in the maquiladora industry, says that the immigration problem cuts across borders.
La migración ya no solamente es del sur de México hacia...
Currently, migration is not only from the south of Mexico trying to cross into the United States, but people are coming to work directly in the factories because they think that in places like Tijuana, there are employment opportunities, a better salary. But the truth is that there is unemployment. We also see that many people who try to cross into the United States and are not able to get stuck here. They have no home, no job, they are persecuted by the police. And not only does the United States run after and criminalize immigrants, but our country does it as well. We have people from Central America that, due to political violence or economic violence, have had to come all the way over here.
Para el paso libre de la gente y no solamente de las mercancías.
Immigrant rights advocates expect the May 1st economic boycott against U.S. businesses and products to bring to the spotlight the contributions made to the U.S. economy by immigrants while pushing for a just immigration law. Among the numerous demonstrations that are foreseen throughout Mexico and the United States today, the Mexico City May Day March will take on another form, kicking off at the U.S. Embassy and led by the Zapatista spokesman Subcomandante Marcos in what is expected to be the decade's largest protest for workers and immigrant rights against the free trade economic policies represented by President Vicente Fox. For FSRN, this is Luz Ruiz reporting from the Tijuana-San Diego border.
As people migrate to the U.S., many immigrant workers are finding themselves in industries where major labor unions are not helping organize for worker rights, including taxi drivers, domestic workers, and street vendors, just to name a few. In New York, street vendors, who are a distinct part of the city's culture and who are mostly made up of immigrant workers, face constant harassment from police and are oftentimes levied $1,000 fines for conducting business in the city's biggest shopping areas. But street vendors are fighting back. Bilal Moran of the Community News Production Institute reports.
Teresa Gonzalez sells jewelry as a street vendor just off Broadway in Manhattan, New York. Gonzalez, who comes from Mexico, is one of thousands of immigrant street vendors in the city. Street vendors, in pursuing their livelihood, face massive fines due to stringent city regulations. Gonzalez, who has been hit with a $1,000 fine that almost wiped out her business.
The police is too much harassment every only. For black and Spanish. If you're the police, so white people doesn't do and that doesn't give a ticket, nothing.
Gonzalez, who is a member of the Street Vendor Project that advocates for the rights of street vendors in New York, is like many in her industry who has received large fines for setting up her business in a restricted area. James Williams, who is also a street vendor and who is a board member of the Street Vendor Project, says it's the areas in the city heavily dominated by big corporations where street vendors are not welcome.
You can't work in Times Square, the 34th Street area.
Yeah.
Right along Broadway. Those are the main strips that you we would like our street vendors to work. We as citizens deserve to have them. We're business people too. We're the smallest of small business, but we are business people.
William, who is working with officials to resolve some issues faced by the street vendors, is adamant about pursuing equality through the Street Vendors Project.
The street vendors used to make decent money in the World Trade Center area, and once that went down, it took away a lot of the area where street vendors would make their money. And because of the other restrictions on the other neighborhoods, everything is compacted now. Street vendors are piling up, whether it be your fruit vendors, people selling your hot dogs, sausages. I mean, we're all vendors and they're all part of this organization. And we are going to make some changes.
James also states that some of the street vendors are being threatened with possible deportation and added punishment faced by this largely immigrant workforce. I'm Bilal Moran reporting for Free Speech Radio News.
Tens of thousands joined traditional May Day parades in France's major towns and cities today. Morale was high after workers' and students' unions inflicted a major defeat on the government by forcing it to withdraw its unpopular youth employment law, the CPE. Still, labor leaders have promised for more protests to come. Tony Cross reports from Paris.
Despite gray skies, it's springtime in Paris, and there are two signs that it's May Day. Street hawkers selling lilies of the valley that the French traditionally give to friends and family today, and trade unionists and left-wingers on the streets to celebrate International Workers' Day. The months of February and March saw a series of huge demonstrations. They forced Prime Minister Dominique de Villepin to scrap his brainchild, the CPE, an employment scheme which, he claimed, would reduce youth unemployment by making it easier to fire young workers. France's many unions haven't kept up the united front that sent the government reeling in that battle. There are at least three labour marches in Paris today. The biggest was called by the most hard-line unions and left-wing parties. France's best-known trade unionist, Bernard Thibault, of the CGT Union Federation, says that he wants full-time employment contracts for all and to scrap the new jobs contract, a scheme which made it easier for small companies to fire their employees.
In the next few days, we're going to consult with each other, and I hope it will be with maximum unity on what means we will use to put pressure on the authorities to obtain, I hope, a freeze on recruitment with the new jobs contract and requalification of already existing contracts.
If today's demonstrations were no bigger than last year's May Day marches, they did have many more young people on them. These were the students who joined the movement against the CPE. Marie is a student activist who's a May Day veteran, but she says that many of those dancing and chanting around her have just discovered the labor movement.
I think for many it's their first demo because they've just come out of the movement against the CPE. We managed to get that withdrawn. And now we're here to fight against all job insecurity. We really won a victory, and now all the students feel we should continue this struggle because there are other battles against this government. It's got no more legitimacy. This government, when you see Villepin and President Chirac at 23% in the polls, they're completely ridiculous.
Paris has always hosted refugees from repressive governments and conflicts in other parts of the world. Today, Palestinians, Latin Americans, and Iranians joined the march. But the most numerous were Tamils from Sri Lanka, backing the separatist Liberation Tigers of Tamil Eelam, and left-wing Kurdish nationalists from Turkey. Elias, a sympathizer of a Turkish Maoist group, is perhaps more ideological than many demonstrators. He thinks that world events are turning left.
The revolution in Nepal shows that the revolution is going forward, and it shows what the class struggle means. Whether it's today, tomorrow, in 10 years, or 50 years, the day will come when this system changes.
Earlier today, National Front leader Jean-Marie Le Pen held his annual rally at the statue of Joan of Arc. He was happy to see politicians from the governing UMP adopt the hard right slogan, France, love it or leave it. Some on the mainstream right are turning to increasingly hard-line nationalist rhetoric. The demonstrators on the streets this afternoon hope that won't reverse the impetus they've built up on the left. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Tony Cross in Paris.
In other news, guerrillas are suspected of killing at least 35 Hindus in Indian-administered Kashmir today. The massacre comes just 2 days ahead of talks between Indian Prime Minister Manmohan Singh and the moderate faction of Kashmiri Separatist Alliance. Shahnawaz Khan reports.
It was a pre-dawn attack in the remote Hindu-dominated hamlets of Doda district in Indian-administered Kashmir. Reports pouring in from Doda say unidentified gunmen assembled people of Panjdobi and Thawa village in two houses at around 2 a.m. and fired indiscriminately, killing 19 and injuring 10 others. Some of the assailants were wearing combat fatigues. In another incident in the neighboring Udhampur district, suspected guerrillas killed 13 people in Basantgarh village after abducting them. SP Vaid is the Inspector General of Police for Jammu province.
A group of 5 to 6 terrorists came, probably belonging to Lashkar-e-Taiba, and gathered people of Hindu community in two houses of Nambardar and Chowkidar and fired indiscriminately, killing 19 of them and injuring 10 of the other people.
Both the mainstream politicians and separatist groups in Kashmir condemned the attack that comes 2 days ahead of a round of talks between Indian Prime Minister Manmohan Singh and the moderate faction of Kashmiri Separatist Alliance, Hurriyat Conference. Chief Minister of Jammu and Kashmir, Ghulam Nabi Azad, called the attack a handiwork of people unhappy with the peace process in Kashmir. Chairman of the moderate faction of Hurriyat Conference, Mirwais Umar.
There are so many agencies who are working in Kashmir, and it's very easy to blame the armed resistance groups, because the first reaction comes in that way. But you can't forget the fact that in the last election, we saw how members of the ruling coalition government in Jammu and Kashmir were involved in militant activities.
Last week, candidates from the ruling coalition were accused of carrying out grenade attacks near two polling stations to scare away voters of the rival candidates. For Free Speech Radio News, I am Shahnawaz Khan.
A massive crowd gathered on the National Mall in Washington, D.C. on Sunday to show support for ending genocide in the western Sudanese area of Darfur. Maria Cayer was there, and she brings us this report.
Marching to the National Mall, a group of Sudanese refugees chanted and held up signs reminding passerbys why they were marching to save Darfur and to end the genocide there. One of the marchers, Abdul Gabber Adam, a native of Darfur, said the Arab militia and the government of Sudan are systematically killing Africans in the country because they want to take their lands.
We want to share authorities, we want to share wealth, we want to share the natural resources, whatever on the land. But we've been denied over the last 50 years all these rights. We don't have any right. We just work at the farms and the cattle and pay whatever taxes the 18% want us to.
At the end of last week, President Bush met with some activists working to help the Sudanese. One of those, Faith McDonald of the Institute on Religion and Democracy, said she reminded the president that we need to continue to support the southern Sudanese because that would be the best way to help the people in Darfur. With all the people of southern Sudan coming together, the country's leaders in Khartoum will see that they can't keep bullying and killing people in Darfur. McDonald also believes the Sudanese should not be forced to bear the consequences of proposed immigration laws that might not take into consideration their unique circumstances.
My feeling is that the people who should be first in line to receive immigration status, to receive asylum, are those who have suffered persecution, those who have died for their faith and seen their families die for their faith. These are the people that we should embrace and open up our country to. And I believe that we should be allowing more of the lost boys who are still languishing at Kakuma refugee camp to come in as well. The Sudanese are wonderful for our country, and they would be great allies to us and stand with us just as they're standing with the people in Darfur today.
In Washington, D.C., I'm Maria Cecile Collier for Free Speech Radio News.
Today, Iraqi President Jalal Talabani says he recently met with representatives of 7 armed groups and is optimistic that they may agree to lay down their arms. Today does mark the 3rd-year anniversary since President Bush announced mission accomplished in Iraq. Meanwhile, reports indicate that U.S. military raids are being conducted in schools throughout Fallujah. Salam Talib of Free Speech Radio News reports.
The American military detained 20 students, 15 years old and younger, at Ammar ibn Yasser Middle School in Fallujah, west of Baghdad, after a rocket missile hit the American military base next to the school. Assam Rashid, an Iraqi filmmaker, told FSRN that even this kind of acts have not been reported in the news enough, but it is still happening.
I was filming in an elementary school, and the U.S. military raided it. Imagine. The students were 7 to 12 years old, and the soldiers entered the school as though they were coming into an enemy war zone. I expect that the military will do more and more.
During the busy time of Iraqi college final exams, Al-Baghdadi TV caught on tape a car bomb explosion in front of Al-Mustansiriya University, killing many students and injuring others. The film shows three students trying to push away a suspected car parking at the main entrance of the university when it exploded and killed them.
The Al-Baghdadi TV cameraman was filming in front of the university when a car bomb exploded while the three students were trying to push it. The cameraman was injured and he got shrapnel in the spine. The university closed for the rest of the week. The students have their final exams and that will affect them. Even now, the situation at the university area is still not stable.
The education system in Iraq is considered one of the best in Arab countries. The system now suffers from lack of teachers. 170 teachers have been assassinated, and thousands of others have left Iraq out of fear. Students have other problems because the daily lives of Iraqis is difficult. Assam Rashid again.
My wife is a student at the university. Every day, she is afraid to go to school because of the explosions. Even the taxis refuse to go to many areas around Baghdad. Not to mention the lack of electricity. It is off for 6 hours and on for 1 hour in my area. All of these things make the education system go down.
For Free Speech Radio News, this is Salam Talib.
300,000 people marched in New York City on Saturday against the war in Iraq and U.S. hostility towards Iran. Other related issues were also high on the agenda. Free Speech Radio News' Melinda Tuhus reports.
Despite the seriousness of the issues, the high-spirited crowd was in a festive mood, marching under warm sunshine. A banner wider than Broadway, down which protesters marched for 2 miles, read, "End the war in Iraq, no war in Iran, abolish all nuclear weapons now." In addition to thousands of other banners and signs, some people pulled a prisoner in a cage, hands and feet shackled, dressed in a bright orange jumpsuit and wearing a black hood. They called for an end to torture at Guantanamo Prison and everywhere else. High school student Rachel Cobesa came to New York on a peace train from New Haven, Connecticut. She explained why she was there instead of doing something else on a perfect spring day.
We're protesting the war against Iraq, the lack of attention paid to Katrina victims and victims across the world, just to say no to the Bush agenda.
In a first for the current anti-war movement, opposition to policies leading to global climate change was another key demand of the protest. Ibrahim Raimi is a leader of the Climate Crisis Coalition, representing 70 environmental, peace, justice, and labor groups.
We think that the consumption of oil is an integral part of global warming, which of course is one of the things and the central thing that we are concerned with, but we also recognize that there can be no real peace and no justice without a sustainable future for all of us. And that means that in every aspect of the peace movement, the anti-war movement, the movement for social justice, that we integrate into those movements a recognition of the climate crisis and a need for direct action to stop it.
Raimi added that climatologists say more hurricanes like Katrina are on the way and are one more example of the interrelatedness of the issues of war, global warming, and environmental justice. He called for working to elect candidates in this year's midterm elections and in 2008 who support the coalition's goals. There was no rally with speakers, and several people in the crowd were overheard objecting to a missed opportunity to bring people together and inspire them for the struggle ahead. For FSRN, I'm Melinda Tuhus in New York City.
And you are listening to Free Speech Radio News, filling in for Otto Bogado. I'm Mitch Jezerich in New York.